interrupting the current neo-Uranial climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 612. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get behind the woodshed. It's pretty much that simple. Any of us who have lived life have known what experience can teach us. Last week I reported on microplastics in our body and not being free of those. Pretty insidious little things, aren't they? So small. This week, a bit of amplification as to the extent of the possible harms being caused as these nanoparticles migrate into all the cells of our bodies. And consider that these potential comorbidities that I'm going to read about is what maybe the great Kobe Swindle jab may have worked on as you consider these things and their interplay. Maybe as that binary or trinary weapon system I had mentioned years ago about how this was supposed to work. There's evidence what they had done in the 30s and 40s and 50s particularly. Microplastics found in multiple human organ tissues correlated to lesions. Research led by Zhejiang Agriculture and Forestry University in China has performed a metadata investigation into the presence of microplastics in humans. Humans, not mankind. They treat you like animals. Every time you hear the word human, you need to understand that because of the humanism view. But for our purposes today, just to understand, our bodies respond pretty much the same as what they're finding here. We are the same. They just title us some way and they treat us some way different. They report as a concerning relationship between micro and nanoplastic, which was the MNP mnemonic I designated for you last week. Concentrations in damaged tissues and links with multiple health conditions. Plastic usage soared from 1.5 million metric tons in the 1950s to nearly 390.7 million in 2021. With the increased use in consumer products came elevated microplastic plastic pollution circulating in soil and waterways, eventually accumulating in the environment, food webs, and human tissues. Consistent methods to pinpoint and quantify the MNPs in human tissue were lacking. Reliable data linking MNPs to human diseases are necessary for assessing potential risks and developing mitigation measures. So this is really having to speak to us. Remember, the government doesn't care. They've allowed all this stuff. They have their standard for what they do, and yet they really don't look out for mankind as they're supposed to. As I was mentioning, maybe we should be going back to raw milk in glass bottles. Maybe that will help to solve this a bit, at least when you're intaking this food. In the study, mapping micro-nanoplastics in various organ systems, the emerging links to human diseases, published by the TRAC, Trends in Analytic Chemistry, investigators collected 61 available research articles for MNP detection in human tissues, plus 840 articles in MNP toxicological mechanisms. Data came from spectroscopy, microscopy, and pyrolysis gas chromatography, mass spectrometry investigations to identify polymer types in different tissues. Toxicological studies employed cell models and animal experiments to examine oxidative stress, inflammation responses, and related signaling pathways. The studies documented particles detected in skin, arteries, veins, thrombi, bone, marrow, testes, semen, uterus, and placenta. MNPs were found in the digestive system from saliva to feces, liver, and gallstones. Within the respiratory system, MNPs were everywhere, including lung tissue, with microscopic fibers common to bronchoalveolar lavel fluid and sputum. Positive correlations emerged between particle abundance and specific disorders such as inflammatory bowel syndrome, thrombosis, cervical cancer, and uterine fibroids. Just the people that I've been heard and hit in the last two decades have just been that list right there in large part. Wonder where it comes from. Toxicological tests showed a possible MNP-triggered oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, inflammatory responses, and apoptosis in various cell types, along with organ-level concerns like neurodegenerative disease onset when crossing the blood-brain barrier. Haven't we been talking about that recently? A critically important signal in the metadata discovered by the researchers was that the measured levels of MNPs tended to be higher in tissues with lesions than in non-lesioned tissues. These included inflamed intestines, fibrotic lungs, or cancerous growths, suggesting a potential link between MNP buildup and local pathology. But there's an intriguing what came first, the chicken or egg problem with lesions having higher concentrations of MNPs. A quick author note here, the chicken or egg problem has an obvious solution, as eggs predate chickens by hundreds of millions of years, refining the question to what came first, the chicken or the chicken's egg, could imply that the first chicken emerged from an egg of a non-chicken fowl predecessor, but would require still further refinement as to whether the chicken's egg belongs to the fowl, the chicken within, or requires a chicken to lay it. In the case of what came first, the lesions or the microplastic, it is possible the MNPs contribute to inflammation, oxidative stress, and cellular damage, which can cause or worsen tissue lesions. But it is also possible that these lesions accumulate more MNPs in already damaged tissue areas. While the current findings do not provide a direct cause and effect relationship, they offer a good targets for further study. And that's the reason why I read all that. It sounds just like a big question, but for those of you that do this study for you in systems operations to cure the beginning causes, I wanted to read that so you heard that. But there's a couple of conditions you may want to keep in your mind as you're looking about for how to solve some of these things that you may or maybe feeling, sensing, found, or want to avoid. Again, building the body systems to help reject or cure yourself, fix yourself over time, essentially. There are no conventional methods for removing microplastics from the environment or human tissues. While efforts are underway to discover methods of environmental mitigation, developing such strategies to handle diverse particle sizes and chemistries of the particle embedded in living tissue presents an immense and potentially unattainable challenge. So this is going to be a very difficult thing, and just understand that this could have been looked at in the future. We realize in the great Comey swindle, as the studies poured out, that the companies would do the tests so that they could continue to make the statements they needed to make. But those of us that are looking in through that don't have those biases to be able to state or to cover. We can see this going on. So this supposed unattainable challenge may be better looked at by people that are not focused on the unattainable, but say, okay, the body cleanses itself. How do we start to get it to work on these little particles? It may be a condition where an aggregate has to show up before that can be done. It'll take a few people looking at this to figure out how that might work. It might be a fairly simple process. I don't know. But these lesions cause other things to form, or they can indicate an artificial condition that's coming on that you're being treated for that doesn't really exist, all because of these microplastics, at least, as we're now finding out. Again, as I said, I'd heard of them. I'd heard that they were in our bodies. Didn't quite understand the mechanism. Wasn't too sure about them. But these two reports here and the study and the follow-up seem to be pretty definitive that it's happening. It's not just an idea. It's just not something to be afeared about. It's something that we're doing to ourselves. Certainly, limiting our use of plastic wouldn't be a bad idea. Maybe watch the glass, too. There's so much in the world now that seems to be a pollutant that seems to get into things. I don't quite understand some of it as far as why does it get so much, but this is what we get into when we hear about the global business, if you will. This is where they're just running things through to feed everybody, to supply everybody. And no one's really paying attention to the potential harms. At some point, there's going to be stuff that you can't get away with doing. It has to happen, and if you want that thing, a measured response here, but it would seem to me we were hearing more of the chemical interference, the direct chemistry coming out of the plastics And so that they were addressing that. But here it's the material itself. It's the polymers itself. And as far as the nature not being able to deal with it, I'm not so sure. We'll see. When you get into big piles of plastic in the ocean, nature comes and starts to eat away at it. And it makes it smaller pieces. And that's what starts to be picked up by the bigger organisms. I don't think anybody studied how far down it'll go and whether or not it turns into an elemental capacity. Into an elemental substance, a broken down substance that's not considered the polymer that we seem to think, or you know, the plastic that we seem to use. And apparently all this microplastic cellular migration has primed us for this coming revolution that was essentially planned, it seems, and based in all this as well. It's, like I said, the trinary weapon, the binary weapon, your need to figure it out, their need, because of your demand, to fix it for them, and then they got to come along, this organization, this government has to come along and keep tabs of it all. And it's all an extortion of your life and your value and what they can get out of you. The CDC and Palantir and the AI healthcare revolution. And this is, not again, not unknown news. I want to just show you. It is coagulating like a blood clot. And it's coming right up around to service us, if you will. And all of these people are already in the government, already working. Remember, Techno Swamp with Palantir, Thiel, Musk, all these folks are right up around Trump's nadir and how fast that started to happen. And the Pentagon and Silicon Valley are in the midst of cultivating an even closer relationship as the Department of Defense and big tech companies seek to jointly transform the American healthcare system into one that is artificial intelligence driven, AI. I think it's antithetical intelligence, but that's not for me to say, I guess. The alleged advantage of such a system espoused by the Army itself, big tech and pharma executives, as well as intelligence officers, would be unleashed by the rapidly developing power of the so-called predictive medicine, or a branch of medicine that aims to identify patients at risk of developing a disease, thereby enabling either the prevention or early treatment of that disease. And so, I just want to remind you, I've been talking about this, the culminations of these things as we're moving along, to be aware they're here. I'm actually thinking we have some content on the network, different content providers or hosts that have actually talked more to this predictive medicine than I ever will, because it's too specific. I just tell you it's there, and we show you how, I show you how, where it's written, how it's been written, and when you see how it's been written, you can see how they're going to come at you. And then that gives you an opportunity to avoid it. And you also see consistently, whether you think you do or not have a choice, there is this choice. It may not be a very good choice, but it's a choice nonetheless. So that's why I bring this up, because I don't think people appreciate that they do have the power, as I showed you in the Great COVID Swindle. All you had to do was go down to the local communicable disease law and say, you need to follow these obligations and duties before I have to do a thing. And if they didn't, then you had an out with that habeas corpus or some other thing that you wanted to develop, I suppose, same thing. Any injunction would have worked in a way, except that doesn't slip the burden onto them like a habeas does. But anyway, so this, I point this stuff out so that we can see it coming and we can make a decision. It's not just slapping us in the face. This is where they're taking it. Do we want to actually go there? And what's the responsibility on us that we're going to have to take on in order to be able to avoid it? It's really the whole definition of what's behind the woodshed. You create them to be the miscreant attacking you when they don't let you have what you should have a right, but then you have the responsibility to be there, to be that adult in the conversation, so to speak, to have those answers for you. In this article, this will be apparently achieved via mass interagency data sharing between DOD, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the private sector. In other words, the military and intelligence communities, as well as the public and private sector elements of the United States healthcare system, are working closely with big tech to predict diseases and treat them before they occur, and even before symptoms are felt, for the purported purpose of improving civilian and military health care. So, I mean, I'll go through this. This is an extensive article, but we could go through it even deeper. As I said, the Great COVID Swindle, they treat you as humans, they treat you as animals, and the veterinary side of the military picked this up And when they refer to you as a civilian, you're in a military jurisdictional concept. It's being approached as if you're a civilian in a war area. So, and I'm not saying that the word civilian may not mean attorney. That's not what we're talking about here. But you see, it's consistent with the great Covey swindle. They're now kind of refining their game. All the same players, but more intricate, more modernized, more pulled together, more digital, big data. All working together. This cross-section team plans to deliver this transformational in healthcare system by the first utilizing the sharing of DoD's healthcare data set, which is the most comprehensive in the world. Did you know that, folks? It seems, however, based on the program that already utilized these predictive approach and necessity for the machine learning and the development of AI technology, that this partnership would also massively expand the breadth of the healthcare data set through an array of technologies, methods, and sources. Yet, if the actor and institutions involved in lobbying for implementing these systems indicate anything, it appears that another, if not primary, purpose of these push towards a predictive AI healthcare infrastructure is the resurrection of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA's, managed and Central Intelligence Agency, CIA-supported program that Congress officially shelved decades ago. That program, Total Information Awareness, was a post-9/11 pre-crime operation which sought to use mass surveillance to stop terrorists before they committed any crimes through the collaborative data mining efforts between the public and private sector. So there it is, public and private. I was hoping I was emphasizing some of these words of this relation, this fascist relationship within the government, this collaborative relationship, the public privacy, all this, the corporations that come in that fulfill a service for the government. It's a modernizing. They do, these words are right here to tell us the future that they want is in play and has been, and the military is advancing it. While the pre-crime aspect of TIA is the best known component of the program, it's also included the component that sought to use the public and private health and financial data to predict bioterror events and pandemics before they emerge. If that doesn't speak to 9/11, they made you a presumed criminal. I don't know what else they do, because remember, they went right after taking you out of your banks unless you could prove something, and you needed their ID to do it. You were not free from doing that. Those of us that freed ourselves don't have access. So there's the future they want, but this is anybody who were pretty strict about that back in 2001 and late, just after. We've had to live this austere life, as I told you. Just learn to live the austere life. It'll start showing where the differences are so that you can truly see that it's not a cakewalk. It's not just a decision you make and they leave you alone. No, that's not the way it's going to work. You become the extremist, the lone wolf, don't you, just by doing that. So this is how they've got it all set up. When you start understanding it, you start to know that you have to have a word. That's that word in your mouth. You've got to have an answer for them that isn't what they thought and more understood than they can ever possibly understand, because they literally are just working out of a book what they're told. This was TIA's biosurveillance program, which aimed to develop necessary information technologies and resulting prototype capable of detecting the covert release of biological pathogen automatically and significantly earlier than traditional approaches. So, and the other thing here, as you see, there's a general application that any one of you was going to do this as well. How big they expanded this whole thing. It's pretty remarkable. So they run on these lunacy ideas, but they then make policy and programs around it, and Congress goes ahead and funds it. It legitimizes that tact. In late 2022, Palantir announced that it and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would continue their ongoing work to, quote, plan, manage, and respond to future outbreaks and public health incidents by streamlining its existing biosurveillance programs into a single, efficient vehicle to support the CDC's common operating picture. This common operating picture aims to secure strong collaboration across federal government, jurisdictional health departments, private sector entities, and all key health partners. So you see, this is not a separated republic. This is a unified republic already, the more perfectus union. It's already in play. This violates the separation of powers. This violates a whole lot of things where we found out in the end, near the end, where the court cases were coming out here last year, the CDC is only an advisory council, but they impose themselves like they are the authority. Completely illegal. And the local officials gave it to them, even though they had a higher duty. They have, in the United States, they have the reserve power of health. And that reserve power for health care, if you will, it's not the care by the doctor, it's for public health, not the government, you, the general population, and there's a due process they have to go through. They abandoned all of that in the great Kobe swindle. And they found out when they did that, I told you they were going to see how effective it was. And I'm telling you, it was absolutely effective. In fact, somebody said that in the ex-Twitter that they had done covering up their wrongs. I've responded, they didn't do anything wrong. The people didn't stop it. They went, this wrong was global and nobody stopped it. How good they pulled this off. It's fascinating. So you see the unity already working here. That's violation of our organic establishment America. They're just running with it. This common operating picture. There is nothing common, actually, in these states and their authority. And if you think there is, go try to fight your court cases using some other state's laws. The CDC and Palantir publicized this partnership just months after the CDC announced the creation of its Center for Forecasting Outbreak and Analytics. Let me remind you, the word outbreak used here a couple times already, that is right inside the local jurisdiction where you may live, your local county or your smallest public health situation territory, but for the United States, it's typically the county. Those are the authorities for the outbreak. And then you have the epidemic. You see how far in the overreach from a federal advisor tied into these military and the partners, so-called, are reaching way into the state's reserve power. By talking to an outbreak. That's just something that happens in a very local area. It's not even the entire couple of counties, let alone a state, where the epidemic might be announced. So understand how deep this intrusion is already planned and starting to operate. And then also think if RFK Jr. steps in, he's stepping right into this. You don't hear him talking anything about this kind of overreach. In fact, a lot of it he embraces if you listen very carefully. The CDC and Palantir publicized this partnership just months after the CDC announced the creation of the Center of Forecasting and Outbreak and Analytics. This office now plans to expand biosurveillance infrastructure via public-private partnerships across the country to ensure the local communities constantly supply federal agencies with a steady stream of biodata from develop AI-generated pandemic forecasts. Error-prone forecast. There's so many stories coming out about this error-prone condition. In fact, I won't have it for you. There's a link. There's a story. Go read. Apple's pulling its AI-generated news service. It's so error-prone, they're pulling it. And yet the government's already into embracing it and using it. The AI-generated pandemic forecast. Another violation. Within the United States, giving the WHO, the WHO, not the Rock Group or the OWL or the Little People from Whoville, but the World Health Organization, giving them any merit at all in their definition for pandemic requires two separate regions. There's nothing in the United States, at least the continental United States, that it constitutes a two regions. I don't even know if it actually makes up one full region. So the CDC is speaking from the WHO perspective here, outside of its jurisdiction on top of that. And I was just going to read this through, but I'm talking a whole lot more about it. This is such a violation. I don't think people really see this. I don't see anybody talking about this stuff. And this is going to be critical for you all to understand how this works out so you can start, say, challenging the jurisdiction, the overreach. You heard a lot about the overreach this year. And you saw the Supreme Court actually putting its foot down, if you will, on four cases, very important agency cases. So you're going to be in the right place to start studying this for yourself in protection against these sorts of things. And we talk about this health care, but see, it's not just the great Kobe swindle, is it? It's any measure of health care that you might be getting. And don't ever forget that they're tying it into the Sustainable Development Goals, and you're going to be culled at some point when they can't extract or you can't contribute to Gaia, if you will, if I can go that trite and narrow. but it's even bigger than all that. So I just try to focus a couple things so you kind of know that they're out there. It's way worse, actually, than what I ever touch in a way. I can't get it. What I read, I can't really cover. It's too abstract for people. So if I don't get the response on what I'm talking about at the broadcast, after the broadcast, or helping people, if I'm not getting the total response generally, there's no sense for me to really talk more about some of this thing. There are people that do the research, and that's why I'm grateful that they're there. You can listen to them fill in the details, if you will. Ultimately, you're going to have to remember what I'm saying to defend yourself, but you'll at least see the details that it's really, really there. You'll convince yourself after you see the infrastructure that they're building in, the capacity building they talk about, how this is working and that it's building in. But getting back to here, they're going to forecast this issue. You see all the fraudulent information coming out of the media and the reports, and AI is going to use all that fraudulent, you know, garbage in, garbage out, I guess, as a lot of people are saying now, which is true. I mean, you have a computer program. Then you got the bias in the program that's making the decisions about what they're going to do with that data. And so it's all a built-in error. I just can't see. I've been telling you, I can't see how it's not an error. Unless you get into just mathematics or something, even then you have design problems. But you see, you're looking, watching the things that are successful are the models that they put a lot of time into that really work in math a lot more, in physics, the design to physics to have to do something. In fact, I think I just saw a RAM engine or something designed completely by an AI, and they had it designed the parts and everything, and it worked the first time out. So that's pretty exciting. So as I've told you, I'm not against the technology, but you've got to properly apply it. Something as nebulous as the body systems is not going to be something you want to have somebody, something making decisions on whether you live or die or get the appointment. And then you hear about the insurance, the insurance companies profiting. You know, again, the industrial insurance, medical industrial complex, and Trump scare, Obama scare, then Trump scare, it all promoted that business. It didn't help in any way. And now you're also getting these corporations to come in to protect all that with the authority, so-called, of the CDC. Remember, CDC is just an advisory council. So, I mean, an advisory board. It has no authority. Why? Because of the way we've established the United States of America was established with reserve power to the states for health care. So you got to really remember this, because this is what I keep hammering. It's not just about this. Look at the organization and the power structure of how this is supposed to happen. And most people don't pay attention. Yeah, your eyes roll back. Or you don't know how it's going to affect. You don't care that you don't think it's affecting you until the day it starts to affect you. And it is affecting us, but we seem to just take a lot. We are real tolerant, almost too tolerant, from what I could tell. Certainly the great Kobe Swindle bioterrorism attack was that lesson, at least for me, if no one else saw it. To me, it wasn't just a bunch of contrarians, we want to believe the experts. No, I told you why you can't control. They're not even an expert, right? There's no law that protected you that was used first. They just started yapping. And they did what this article is saying is happening before. AI will predict ahead of time that something's going on. I wonder how it's going to predict all that microplastic that it's now thrown your body into a whack. The investigation will examine the CDC's, the writing here, this investigation will examine how the CDC's Center of Forecasting and Outbreak Analytics signifies a major step toward the AI-driven healthcare system, and how Palantir's management of the program's data strongly suggests that its partnership is the latest multi-sector implementation of a pre-crime agenda of TIA, and what is frightening possibilities that the AI-driven healthcare system could enable a future pandemic and healthcare in general. And this revolutionary system ultimately pushes society further into the sights of a digital panopticon that seeks surveillance and control of all the makes up the average citizen from the outside of their bodies to within. Microplastic, nanoplastic infested place that it is now. There he talked about it here, the digital panopticon, one phrase I've used. I invented, if you will, the Siberian gulag. Not SIB like in Russia, no, the CYB, Siberian, the cyber gulag that we'll be trapped into if we agree. And they're going to make it really, really hard to not agree. I can just tell you that. The more stuff I'm reading and now coming up, it's going to be so very hard. However, if we gear up, if it's possible, I think we have, there's going to be enclaves of people that will be able to resist and do it correctly. And I would hope that we start finding out that for ourselves in places. I say that, my mind goes, oh, I don't know how I'm going to do it myself. I'm in such a bad way. I'm in an abusive condition. I really can't escape. I have just not been able to figure out my friends that are close by that I talk to. They can't figure it out. When you got nothing and you got nothing coming in and can get nothing, it makes it very, very difficult. And so that will be part of the plan of them taking away the austerity, pull stuff away so you don't have anything to work with. So it's going to take even more integration with people that you can trust. And that was another thing I just learned, even your closest friends can turn on you for no reason, zero reason. Just blows me away. I don't even understand. I'm not even wired to maybe begin to believe it. That's enough for I can go on and on. It's a very long article. They go through a lot of things. You'll hear a lot of what I've talked about, but here's a little more detail than I may have get you at some point in time relative to just bringing the concepts forward and how to deal with them on the contact point. And as I've said, I don't need to know too many details once I see the modus operandi, if you will. I see the condition of the plan. I can work that through pretty quickly, and that's what we address. I don't need to know how they exactly made, you know, the jab. I just need to know you didn't need to get it, and here's how you tested that, and this is how you stopped it until they could bring it. You didn't really test it by any rights you had. It was the obligations they had, right? You didn't even have to do much. You say, no, that doesn't work until you follow this form. This is a limited government. I'm going to hold you to that. You see how easy that was? You're not even dealing in a court. You're just telling the authority. They aren't any authority by law. So anyway, I'll let you read the rest of this article. Long article, a lot of stuff, very extensive report. And I should say this came from the Unlimited Hangout people, and they tend to do lots of research and lots of work. And it's hard to find, like as I said, I read through this and it's everything, lots of things. I can't say everything. Lots of things I've talked about, pulled together myself. Here they say it again, and now it's more up-to-date information, a summary of what's going on. And I think it's important for us to see that. Moving now into more of this big data, cyber detail type stuff, the programs that they're going to be using, like I just said, Apple pulls back their new AI news system. They just pulled it back. But what are they making? They're making these health products that are phoning home all the time. All kinds of data is coming off of them. They're using you as the product. But these are the devices that they're going to get all this data. You heard they're going to be getting information from you. I assume the phones are going to have a whole lot of stuff built into them to be able to sense you, too, as far as what's going on. Here, breathe into here, whatever. And so scrape your finger over there, put your fingerprint here. I mean, it's just going to be on and on. They're going to be listen to your voice. They have algorithms to listen to your voice to predict if you have a health problem or not, whether you do or not. But once they say, and you're tied in, and they say, you're going to be helped to the expert, right? You're the official. They're the official expert that says what's supposed to be. And so don't underestimate the power of what goes on here. But it gets more insidious. I've talked about the technology that they would have it out, like, let's say, in the open, in the public. Companies that would have because of a pressing need, they'll claim they need to have these stations, sensors that are up. Let's say you got to go through the check stand. They'll have a sniffer on that check stand, and it'll take in air all the time, and it'll identify you as you go through, and whatever their AI says, if you're healthy or not, that'll be all they need to know. And that's all you need to know. The next thing you know, you're whisked away. Try to explain yourself. Well, you're going to be hard to do that when they stick you in a big plastic bag. And I know that sounds a little bit ludicrous, but it may not quite happen quite like that, but think about that happening, how this technology starts to come. But written in a 404 Media article, which needs a subscription to read, so I'm only going to touch base on a couple of things here. And it was from an article written on that article. The hackers claim massive breach of location data from a location data giant threatened to leak data. Remember now, we're going backwards a little bit. This data will be gained from you and will be coming from all this big bio data that they're gaining once the CDC and Palantir get together. This is where all this data starts to go, into these big third-party repositories. And we see now they're vulnerable in this report. Candy Crush, Tinder, MyFitnessPal. See the thousands of apps hijacked to spy on your location. And a lot of people say, I don't care, I'm not doing anything. I'm not talking about what you think about you. This is going to be about what someone else thinks about you. And you may not have a say about it. And remember all the It's been ruled to be illegal, I think. I just recently saw it. I don't saw it. I don't remember it quite yet. But this geofencing, they'll use this in a health matter. And that may not be so unlawful, if you will, illegal, unlawful the way they'll do it, because it has to do with a public health emergency type thing. And that's like a national security. It drops all the immunities away. And you saw, I showed you, even so, that that may exist. That national security imperative might be there. They still have to answer for it. They still have to show, as I pointed out during the great COVID swindle, there has to be that exigent circumstance. And the way I phrased it inside the communicable disease law, it was even there. It was the one of the duties, one of 5 to 10 to 15 in Nevada, I think it was, I was told. They had to, one of the things was they have to demonstrate a non-fraudulent infectious agent. All that's saying is that they have something that they have to do, and until they do, they don't really have the authority they wield or claim or whatever. So that would be the other point. Anyway, so I'll stop. You start thinking about how to apply what I'm talking about. My mind was going to go to applying it in that scenario where you're walking into a store, get into a going through to pay for your stuff, and they do some sniffing, and so I just did it. Going through these scenarios, where they might use that, and what your defense would be. What was your non-fraudulent exigency? Of an infectious agent, not your ideas about one. This is supposed to be proof positive factual things. Anyway, go through, as I say, I bring you all the things you need to know. If you tie them all together over time, then you'll hear how to help yourself in the future, not just the health stuff, any governmental imperative, anything that anybody wants to demand of you. You got to think very carefully, get back to the facts, don't get into your emotion and what if and what about that. And if no, you'll find a right to what needs to be happened and see if they qualified. In this case, your health apps, your non-health apps, are looking for your data. This is just a story about how they can track you down. If they want to know how well you're infectious, they think you're an infectious principal. How are they going to track you down? That little fitness app might be one. Any one of these, Candy Crush, Tinder, all kinds. There's thousands. In fact, I got a link I think you can get on this page. And there's thousands. I mean, it's just amazing what's sitting inside these apps. Some of the world's most popular apps are likely being co-opted. But listen to how this happens. This is even different than what the programmer thought was going on. How insidious these people have become. The apps are likely being co-opted by rogue members of the advertising industry to harvest sensitive location data on massive scale, with the data ending up with a location data company whose subsidiary has previously sold global location data to U.S. law enforcement. Again, it's not what you think. It's going to be what someone else thinks about you that matters. The thousands of apps included in the hacked files from location data company Gravy Analytics include everything from games like Candy Crush and dating apps like Tinder to pregnancy tracking and religious prayer apps across both Android and iOS. Because much of the collection is occurring through the advertising ecosystem, not code developed by the app creators themselves, this data collection is likely happening without users' or even app developers' knowledge. For the first time publicly, we find that we seem to have proof that one of the largest data brokers selling to both commercial and government clients appears to be acquiring their data from online advertising Bidstream rather than code embedded in the apps themselves. Zach Edwards, senior threat analyst at the cyber security firm Silent Push, and who has followed the location data industry closely, tells 404 Media after reviewing some of the data. The data provides a rare glimpse inside the world of real-time bidding, RTB. Historically, location data firms paid app developers to include bundles of code that they collected, the location data of their users. Many companies have turned instead to sourcing location information through the advertising ecosystem, where companies bid to place ads inside apps. But a side effect is that the data brokers can listen in on that process and harvest the location of people's mobile phones. Quote, this is a nightmare scenario for privacy, because not only does this data breach contain data scraped from the RTB systems, but there's some company out there acting like a global honey badger, doing whatever it pleases with every piece of data that comes its way, Edward says. Included in the hacked Gravy data are tens of millions of mobile phone coordinates of data devices inside the United States, Russia, and Europe. Some of these files reference an app next to each piece of location data. 404 Media extracted the app names and built a list of mentioned apps. The list includes dating sites Tinder, Grindr, massive games such as Candy Crush, Temple Run, Subway Surfers, and Harry Potter, Puzzles and Spells, Transit app, Move It, My Period Calendar and Tracker, a period tracking app for with more than 10 million downloads, popular fitness app, My Fitness Pal, social network Tumblr, Yahoo's email client, Microsoft's 365 Office app, and Flight Tracker, Flight Radar 24. And that's just a few, folks. You get this list. It's on and on and on. In fact, I did a quick comparison. I couldn't find any apps I've used, so I was doing pretty good in analyzing the app before. That's what you have to do, really check in deep on the privacy concerns of what it's doing, what it really says it's going to do, what it wants to do. And you can kind of weed through this, but it's difficult. It's built in. I guess this is how you start making money, so that people don't really understand that that's what's going on with it. But when you hear that it can all go back to law enforcement or anything, anybody could be using this to track you down, it becomes a lot more dangerous. The list also mentions that multiple religious-focused apps, such as the Muslim prayer and Christian Bible apps, various pregnancy trackers, and many VPN apps, folks, those of you that were privacy concerned, here you go, which some of the users have may download ironically in an attempt to protect their privacy. Gravy is a company that powers much of the rest of the location data industry. It collates mobile phone location data from various sources that sells that to commercial companies or through its subsidiary Ventel to the United States government agencies. In many cases, those customers include the United States government with the aims of the military, the DHS, the IRS, and the FBI, using it for various purposes. But collecting that data presents an attractive target for hackers. Remember, that's what we were facing. They're all focused on the hackers, and yet the government itself is going through these third parties to hack your life and where you're at. And I told you this a long time, relative to, well, I can't really get into it. So I can just mention a little bit relative to residency, with the things that they established for residency. It's all related to eventually being able to track you down to bring you into the system. And when you start to see that, you start to understand what that's really all about. It's like the movie The Postman was about the post, the mail needing to get to everywhere. And that is the first line of attachment to people by the from the government to them. And so you start to look at this a little bit differently that way. And you also understand then why I keep highlighting a bit that your driver's license is about a commerce certificate and your ID comes from the same department, the same jurisdiction. In other words, you're all in commerce, whether you know it, like it, or don't, or not. It's what, how your status that's presumed upon you when you applied. As I've said a long time ago, I haven't said this in a long time, the applications that you fill are like an applique. You stick it to yourself. So here we have it. The Ventel's clients have included Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Customs and Border Protection, the IRS, the FBI, and the Drug Enforcement Agency. Ventel has also provided underlying data for another government bot surveillance tool called LocateX. I wonder who owns that. But 404 Media and the group of other outlets showed last year how the tool made by the company called Babel Street, could be used to monitor visitors to out-of-state abortion clinics. But the newly hacked data shows that for the first time just how many apps could be part of location data supply chain, even if their developers are not aware of it. An app developer will know if it implemented location data gathering code itself. It might not know that some company somewhere is silently listening in on the advertising process and siphoning data from their app. Surveillance firms can obtain RTB data by acquiring ad tech companies and posing as prospective advertisers. The spy-run location data company doesn't need to successfully place an ad. Instead, it is able to gather data on devices by simply being plugged into that industry. Location data, in this case, can also include a user's IP address, which is then can geolocated to give their course location. Last January, 404 Media reported on an Israeli surveillance company called Patterns, which was sourcing masses of location data through the RTB process. In an exposed training video, Patterns showed some of the popular apps it got location data from: 9GAG, Kick, sports app, Footbin, and a caller ID app such as Call App and Truecaller, and various word Sudoku and solitaire puzzle games. Don't think that if you don't have those, you aren't in on it. If you've got apps in your phone, you need to go look at this list, and I don't even know if that's limited there. There's lots and lots of programs. Every one of these apps are also in the Gravy data. That suggests that Gravy, or wherever Gravy got that data from, also sourced it from interacting with the advertising system rather than the location tracking code baked into the apps. Quote, a significant amount of these geolocation database appear to be inferred by a IP address to geolocation lookups, meaning the vendor of their source is deriving the user's geolocation by checking their IP address rather than using a GNSS Global Navigation Satellite System GPS data. That would suggest that the data is not being sourced entirely from location data SDK. What we're seeing here is the data appears to me to have a huge diversity of apps, Edward says. That's not what you see from an SDK ingestion. That's what you see from bulk RTB ingestion. Unicast, which merged with Gravy in 2023, did not respond to multiple requests to comment, but on the hack, both on the hack and whether it or any of its suppliers have derived location data from real-time bidding processes. And I've told you about this third-party liability, but you also see it's, when I say third-party, it's just any liability past a third-party you don't know and don't deal, and has an inline into this data. And so we have another vulnerability, and if you heard there, you should have heard that the military is involved, the state, the government's involved. The CDC program in Palantir I just spoke about before makes that even more direct to you. And they're already doing this. So look at the expanse of the concentration, the modernization of getting right down to who you are, what you are. And this is in a predictive model. Don't underestimate the threat. I didn't focus too much on that. Like pre-crime. Okay, now it's pre-health. And they determine what your health is going to be or not be, I suppose, since you don't know better, right? And some of you will, and maybe I see a lot that won't. I'm only getting my data from what happened in the Great Kobe Swindle, and about 80% of the population of the world can be led into by the nose to a pond and drowned, and apparently feel, you know, noble about it. I don't know. So we hear the CIA was involved in that last story as well, and it seems like ubiquitous. This information, total awareness, information dominance is just, it puts these people everywhere. And so it's just an ongoing theme. The CIA can read WhatsApp messages. So we got this, talking about a panopticon looking, they got this digital panopticon looking right at us from all sides. And so now we have, I don't know why the CIA is looking, but there they are. There they is. Meta CEO Mark Zuck has acknowledged that the U.S. authorities, including CIA, can access WhatsApp messages by remotely logging into users' devices, effectively bypassing the platform's end-to-end encryption, which makes sense, right, if they got your password. So if you're using WhatsApp, there's no point at which the Meta servers see the contents of that message, Zuckerberg said, noting that even if someone were to hack into Meta's database, they could not access users' private text. What they do is they have access to your phone, so it doesn't matter if anything encrypted, they could just see it in plain sight. And this is the problem of having a hack, having someone infiltrate your phone. It's a little bit different, not quite from this RTB string out there with apps running information that someone's siphoning off information. This is actually where you've downloaded an app and it starts to look at your stuff. Now they got you. They got you right where they want you, and that's the stuff that comes in that you download. Now we're getting more serious anymore. Like I've told you, you just open up an email, it can download something now. It's no click installations as well. And we've heard about some of the more insidious, sophisticated hacks that just get into your system and you can't even find them anymore. So This is the cyber world. This is the brave new world they want us into. And I don't know why, but they want to know about you. And I can see why, because it's about the profit or control. Other than that, I don't know. And I don't know how many more things people want to go ahead and try to allow into their lives as this moves on. It's going to be very, very hard here to be separate. And if you become outspoken, then maybe that's going to be a quicker angle to those of us that might be considered any kind of a threat. If they can't take you out, like digitally, like they are doing to the Rumble accounts, our syndicated accounts at RLM, you're just silenced. And if that's not good enough, then they can find you even quicker here now as we move this thing through. What they do is they access your phone. So Zuckerberg mentioned that tools such as Pegasus, a spyware developed by the Israeli company NSO Group, which can be covertly installed on a mobile phone to access data, is what they'd use. The recent court case says that, I think it was Pegasus, the company, is going to have to maybe pay for that, but that doesn't mean you know that they're there. And these big companies or these offshore companies won't care anyway. Over time, they get you. According to Zuckerberg, the fact that the user's private messages can be jeopardized by directly breaking into their devices is the reason Meta came up with the disappearing messages, where one can have one's message thread erased after a certain period of time. So, great, a little feature, but I think he's coming in too late after all the wrong he's done over the last few years, and now he's trying to become, again, he put $1 million into the inauguration fund for Trump as the tech swamp fills up around Trump's ears, and he's right there with it all. Data about a nuclear submarine base was disclosed by French military personnel through a fitness app, writes Le Monde. So part of the theme, one of the themes this week is these phones are importantly vulnerable to the things you put on them, which are vulnerable, and they can leak some very important information. In this case, we'll just go to some of the most important would be your nuclear weapons arsenal if you're a country. And even those people are not intelligent enough to avoid their phones or apps or to listen to reason. And so this is, again, one of the failure of people to understand their vulnerabilities with this technology. This is not good for you. May not be a big deal with nuclear submarines, but there's going to be other things in your life, and you may have already heard some things that they're using that you may be participating with, that they're already making inroads onto what you're doing. And maybe you don't think you have anything that you're doing wrong. As I said, it doesn't matter what your opinion is of what you're doing wrong. If it's true that there's a three federal law, you're violating three federal laws every day, that's all it's going to take, right? You didn't even know about it. They just find it and they charge you. AI gets a hold of it. We got some money to make. We got some fines to make. And now pretty soon everybody's just, well, I guess their tokens go down to zero, and now they can't go do much, right? That's the pressure. You're not a good enough citizen. But the data about the nuclear submarine's base was disclosed by French military personnel through a fitness app, like their location data. We just got a concurrence right here. Crew members publicly reported their sporting activities via the Strava app. Most of the soldiers registered on the profiles with their names and left them open, noted the newspaper. Thanks to running routes along the closed pier, the berths of the submarines can be determined, while the absence of activities indicating the times of combat deployment of the nuclear submarines at the military base in Longjeu, and in the port of Brest in western France. So here's another thing I found interesting as I read through that. I hope you found it interesting. When you're not somewhere routinely, they figure something out. So if somebody gets tapped into your signal, if you will, your location, and all of a sudden you stop going to your house so many hours a day, all the time, someone who's looking in can know that. And then they start to make their designs on what you got or don't, or where you're on your heading to, or wherever it is you're going. So this is very interesting, too. The deployment of combat deployment was determined by the fact that no one was at the piers at that time, and likely nowhere else, and maybe did go radio silent on that point. So think about what they know about you through your phone or your web-connected portable computer or your SMART appliances phoning home dozens of times a day. And this is also being found out, that what's going on. it's an endless stream of data about you. Because I've talked about over and over, the internet battlefield of things is a thing. It's a real deal. It's not something that we just made up because it was fun. This is almost a plan, again, against an enemy. That was you. The government made you the enemy. You've seen all, they said it in the other article, this is all happening since 9/11, or that just shortly thereafter. Now, the new, an interesting thing has been coming up. I didn't want to approach some of this stuff, but stories come up, people are reporting on it. This story here was interesting in that it's, we know that the CIA is intruding with all these apps, with all this conditions. There's an app called TikTok that has its own problem that's been banned. I think there's going to be a question of whether or not Trump is going to follow through or not with the executive department. It's been banned, I think, in law. And I think it just got determined to be a proper ban by the Supreme Court. And so that caused a flood of a migration of people to another app. It also happens to be a like a TikTok, a place, I guess, to go to. And it's also Chinese-owned. And so this observer, Rachel Martin, wrote an article here that I think I may read. To go through and think about things that she's thinking about, it's through her eyes. Not necessarily everything I would understand to do or think about, but it gives us a range of things on what's really happening in our society relative to our government, the people, the trust of our government, and all that stuff. And people may just shrug their shoulders on this, but we really have to start taking stock about this, because when you hear about the CDC, Palantir, and your life is around your health, and that's going to be tied to your social credit score, which is tied to the health of Gaia, you really have to raise this up when you're going to go to a doctor and they're going to determine whether or not you deserve care and what type of care. We're already hearing the stories and the murder of that insurance company, the CEO. I mean, it's right here for us to tell us to take notice. American influencers would rather a China spy on them than the CIA, and they're right. Facing platform restrictions at home, creators find freedom abroad, migrating to apps beyond Washington's sphere of influence. And so here we have the interesting thing about the cyber world, but also it's a vote with your feet, and you choose the lesser of evils in this case, but one that's not necessarily right in your backyard, right in your front door, knocking on the front door. And this is the interesting problem with all this thing. They end up having to look at, the government has to look at whether they shut the entire thing down. And we talked about DARPA earlier. DARPA designed this place so it couldn't actually be shut down. There's always going to be a path through for communications for the military. And so that's what we're watching this. Anyhow, America's censorship refugees, as the U.S. Supreme Court weighs in on TikTok, America's users are sticking it to Uncle Sam by digitally migrating en masse to China and out of reach of their own government. And so this is another thing I want to highlight to say that Kim.com had mentioned, and I think, I don't know, that Rob Braxton may have said it too, but you're better off to go to a company that is foreign that makes the product than you are to one that's controlled by your own government. Kim.com was saying, go ahead and get a Chinese-made phone, even if it's hacked, because the Chinese government, you're likely never going to deal with that government. And so you got to be careful about that one. But yeah, that is the truth. And so this is what this is kind of talking about. We move from one app and we move on to another one, yet we didn't pick an American app. And so it's just like sanctions. This never stops. It's dumb. It's not going to do a thing. And this is how this starts to work. And I was a bit inspired about this, because that means that all the countries in the world that don't have a control can start doing this, as if you will, to allow a place for people to settle. And we will, I suppose. I don't get too much wrapped up in it, but even without being interested in all this, I think it's important to understand what we need to do, because as the digital panopticon rolls in on us, as they want to take more and more charge of our lives, in particular our health care and all that other, and our living and all that, we're going to have a place or be in a place where we can still communicate but not be subject to that and develop our enclaves of independence or non-dependence that way. The judgment is expected any day. Now, I think they did find that it was lawfully banned, In the absence of workarounds, it also means that Washington's success in censoring an online platform over which it has no control. And that's clearly the issue, as lawmakers have long been pressuring the Chinese parent company, ByteDance, to sell off its American operation to a U.S. entity, effectively handing over control of user data to the United States in order to avoid the ban, in which the company has so far refused to do. Are we seriously supposed to believe that data held by American company is safer in the hands as lawmakers want us to believe? There's an easy litmus test to answer that. Would you be more willing to hand over all your personal information to our own government, which has full jurisdiction over every aspect of your life, or alternatively, to a government on the other side of the planet? Now, I'm going to caution you here. Be careful, because of what we heard years and years ago about Interpol having a long arm to come and get you. So be very careful here, but listen to the logic, because this is about understanding the principles of what's working, and to be mobile, if you will, in your mobile phone. Be fluid on how this thing works. In any case, American TikTokers have already made up their minds. The app is now rife with videos of them packing their bags for their digital migration to a digital Chinese platform called Red Note, known in China as Xiaohongshu. These self-described TikTok refugees have been in the process of saying their goodbyes with tributes to their personal Chinese spies in TikTok videos, including some made with artificial intelligence, showing them doing things like scrolling on their phone and wandering around making videos for TikTok while a Chinese spy dressed in a military-style uniform laughs and cries along with them, or sits at the table with them at the restaurant patio while they film their food, or smiles while they're hanging out with their buddies at the bar and taking group selfies, or sits on the lounge chair on a beach while their American target films their beachside vacation antics. I appreciate the humor here too, folks, even if I don't get into TikTok at all. Apparently, Chinese Red Note users have been bonding with new arrivals who reportedly now number at least 700,000 at last count, teaching them Mandarin Chinese and helping them navigate the platform, while TikTokers are already helping them with their English to help weather the migratory tsunami, for the syllabically challenged, I guess that would be. Some Red Note users are already reporting that it's now considered rude to post videos without captions generated by artificial intelligence in the language other than the one spoken in the video. TikTokers are also encouraging everyone they know to delete all U.S.-owned Meta platforms like Instagram and Faceplant, suggesting that the timing of founder Mark Zuck's announcements that he's loosening some of the more glaring censorship of swear words and tranny skeptic rhetoric is suspicious and little more than a ploy to get them to migrate to those Washington-linked platforms. They're not buying it. So I just had to smile when I read that. That's exactly what I've been saying. We vote with our feet, eventually. Vote with our fingertips here, our mouse. We vote with our cash by not participating. Do not do business. Start moving yourself out. So these folks, the young ones, I guess, are learning what I've been talking about all these years on how you start to make a change. Whether it's the right one or not, it's just the thing you do, and you stop supporting that which you know is bad, absolutely bad, and not going to be good for you. It's no wonder when anyone can run their own test on Faceplant and see the controversial or previously banned content still appears to be shadow banned or demoted by Meta's algorithm. And I don't see X being any different here in the marketplace of ideas. I don't think so. In the town square. Yeah, I don't think so. The third-class citizens that I might be there. A lot of you that don't have your blue check. Yeah, just ridiculous. So now these TikTokers are giving Zuck the single-digit salute and electronically migrating to China to show their dedication to American free speech values, something that they clearly feel that the Supreme Court and lawmakers are failing to uphold. Yep, you read it right. They feel that in order to avoid online censorship shaped by Washington, they'd rather trust Chinese platforms. Quote, Red Note's algorithms do more than recommend content. They shape perception, writes a Forbes contributor in noting that the migration, citing the quiet removal of discussion about issues like, quote, the Chinese government's role in internet regulation. Yeah, well, guess what? The Chinese government probably won't be censoring criticism of Washington or its actions. What would Red Note do if the FBI called them, like it did Faceplant, according to Zuckerberg, and pressured them to censor Russian disinformation like the Hunter Biden laptop story, which actually turned out to be legit? Or if the White House made a call to China to flip out over something on their platform that they didn't like. I mean, basically, these people from Biden's administration would call up our team, like, scream at them and curse. And it's like, these documents are, it's all kind of out there, Zuckerberg said. This guy is a good CEO, multi-billion dollar CEO, said on a recent podcast about the COVID-19 debate that the administration was determined to control with an iron fist across the online landscape within their jurisdiction. Well, I think it was everywhere. But notwithstanding, this is an interesting observation. Someone going through all the anomalies with this. We are moving to China, apparently, right into the hands of the Sesame credit system, aren't we? How that works. The Chinese would tell the Western establishment authoritarians to screw off, which makes it the ideal place for free dissident expression for Westerners, in the same way that the Russian media outlets have become popular platforms for Westerners looking for free address controversial issues that risk getting censored at home for violating the principles of establishment enforced groupthink, or in UK, put you in jail, right? But the United States Supreme Court has already hinted that they see things quite differently, most favoring the national security argument over the free speech of one in the TikTok case. So I wanted to highlight this part. This is the whole basis for what their reasoning was, and national security trumps your constitutional rights. And yet there wasn't and hasn't been any real proof relative to that. Justice Brett Kavanaugh said during arguments earlier this month that the U.S. lawmakers were concerned that China was accessing information about tens of millions of Americans, including teenagers, people in their 20s, and that they could use it to blackmail people who a generation from now will be working in the FBI and the CIA or in the State Department. Just picture it, the year 2045, a Chinese spy calls up the potential future director of the CIA and FBI and whispers, quote, "You sure you want to proceed? I can have a copy here of you lighting your farts at a fire in a TikTok video 20 years ago. What proof do they have that China actually cares more about collecting America's data than the CIA does? Seems to that any given country would have much more interest in the data of its own citizens in the interest of control and crackdowns than to protect status quo and domestic power structure. Well, they're violating the power structure, aren't they? But anyway, we'll move on here. And you'd have to be hopelessly naive to think that the U.S. is an exception. The United States intelligence community currently acquires a significant amount of commercially available information for mission-related purposes, including, in some cases, social media data, according to a partially declassified report by a senior advisory group on commercial information prepared for the Director of National Intelligence in January 2022. Quote, "It can be misused to pry into private lives, ruin reputations, and cause emotional distress and threaten the safety of individuals." You hear that, folks? This is what I've been talking about. And the CDC and Palantir is making it more perfectus that they can do that to each one of you. Even subject to appropriate controls, it can increase the power of the government's ability to peer into private lives to levels that may exceed our constitutional traditions or other social expectations, the report said, clearly referring to the United States government. And you see that they don't even go directly anymore. Again, this third-party tapping, siphoning information from other places is not prohibited, apparently, at all. Not that they'd ever abuse their power, no, because the intelligence community is full of rule abiders. What's the cadet motto at West Point? Anybody have that, folks? What's that motto? "You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do." I was a CIA director, said Mike Pompeo in 2019. "We lied, we cheated, and we stole. It was like we had entire training courses. It reminds you of the glory of the American experiment." Thank you, Mike Pompeo. How charming. Guest TikTokers are dancing off to the online China because they aren't really interested in sticking around for the bask in the glory of the Western establishment's digital thought police experiment just because Zuck and his ilk are suddenly making a big deal of easing up a bit on the draconian hall monitoring. And so that's where we are. That's where we've been. That's where we're going. And this is, again, you push harder than you back off. Push harder. It's just a technique. As I said, they were going to do with the great Kobe swim, to push real hard, see where they can get us. And when we start to push back, they'll step back and wait for us to go back to sleep. And then they'll come in and they'll hit us again in a different way and by different methods. But they'll have a new set of rules to work with, new laws they can point to, make you think make you believe in them if you want to buy in. And a lot of us by then will be bought into the modernization of the technology. This is BTWRLM 612. Another type of American influencer and highly regarded. Very interesting story here, but again, the American democracy and free speech and all, and the trust we can put in the government. And I guess I hope you're hearing this, the lack of trust in the government. People will shrug their shoulders. Yeah, what else are you going to say? This has to become more than just a neck-scrunching, shoulder-lifting action. We don't trust and we don't have confidence in the government because it's killing us. How's that? Now what? But another type of American influencer, not just those running the TikTok, American journalists handcuffed and forcibly removed from Blinken's last presser, with a bit of a couple videos on the link. Sam Husseini was dragged out by armed guards having questioned the U.S. official over his record on Gaza. A journalist was dragged out of the United States Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's final press briefing on Thursday after trying to ask a question about the Gaza ceasefire. Blinken claimed that the past 4 years have seen successful diplomacy, including the truce, even though both Israel and Hamas gave President-elect Donald Trump the credit for the deal. And I have to say, I think they just adopted this early May deal that Biden did present. So this might be the truth here, I think. Yeah, so let's watch how Trump's playing that game. But anyway, moving here to Sam Husseini. Insane here. I just can't believe that we're watching this in America. But here we are. Sam Husseini, a well-known reporter focused on the Middle East, began to put questions to Blinken on his personal reaction to the ceasefire and reminded the official of the findings of the genocide against Israel by multiple international NGOs. Husseini later wrote that he had been seriously manhandled for trying to ask serious questions that the State Department did not want to answer. Among them was whether the U.S. knew about the Hannibal Directive, a controversial doctrine allowing the Israeli military to kill service members or civilians rather than allow them to take them captive. Husseini says that he has also wanted to ask Blinken about his connection to Jeffrey Epstein, Israeli nuclear weapons, and whether the Geneva Conventions applied to Gaza. Blinken responded that the journalist had to respect the process and that he would take questions after he was done with his speech. In a video posted by Ryan Grimm of Dropsite News, several uniformed diplomatic security service officers can be seen approaching Husseini, who is seated in the briefing room. Quote, "Get your hands off me," Husseini cried out as the guard seized him. "Answer my damn questions. You pontificate about free press," he called out. "I am asking questions after being told by State Department spokesman Matt Miller that he will not answer any of my questions. Everybody from Amnesty International to ICJ, International Court of Justice, is saying that Israel is doing genocide and extermination, and you're telling me to respect the process?" Husseini yelled back. "Criminal! Why are you not in The Hague?" he called out repeatedly as DSS officers carried him out of the briefing room. "I tried to ask a series of questions, was carried out and handcuffed. Completely excessive force," Husseini said on X a short while after the incident. So first off, what is the process for exposing a war criminal helping to commit genocide? Because no other journalist in that room spoke out, or before. Many people have been outspoken that all those journalists sat quietly. as the freedom of the press and the right to acquire that information was destroyed right before them. Except for one, which I'll get to in a moment. No other journalist rose to his defense or to journalism or left the room in protest. Again, people are watching this, so it's kind of nice to see that people are paying attention. This was one of the last, if not the last, press conference. They say it was the final, but we've been given some hesitation. Maybe there won't, maybe it will. But if not the last press conference here, to make an objection in the form of getting answers, not to get government stonewalled like he was. So what's the process here? Apparently, in the past, there has been no opportunity to get answers. So they're in the last meeting. Now, when do you pitch the answer? When do you throw it out there, back? What is the process for exposing someone you reasonably believe to be a war criminal needing to be arrested and prosecuted who is evading the law under a color of official authority? Let's think about that. Because I think this may be one of the big hitches in the giddy-up. Where is that accountability process start? And how does it get brought forward? Who is going to help us? When I look at 18 U.S.C. 3 and 4, you look at the list of who is supposed to be helping us. And none have helped to step up either. At the same briefing, Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal accused Blinken, idiot here, of helping destroy our religion, Judaism, by associating it with fascism, and pointed out that the Secretary of State's father-in-law and grandfather were lobbyists for Israel. Quote, why did you sacrifice the rules-based order on the mantle of your commitment to Zionism? Blumenthal shouted as he was taken away by State Department staffers. Why did you allow the Holocaust of our time to happen? How does it feel to have your legacy be genocide? As State Department spokesman Matt Miller approached, Blumenthal told him, he smirked through the whole thing every day. You smirked through genocide. Pretty eloquent, don't you think? I thought it was pretty good. When you hear the video, he comes right out of him. Beautiful. Doing what you can, I suppose, as you're getting hustled out the room. Sam Hussein posted an ex-Twitter that evening that no major mainstream media had contacted him about the matter, and I replied that maybe there was no longer a mainstream media to reply. So I suspect it's time to rise up for independent, actual, real, decentralized media. And I'm asking again, as we move this thing through, and it's going to be for a while till we get it all figured out, please donate to reallibertymedia.com. Find those donation icons and give as you can. Whether a coffee or more, you can contribute, even if you're just a creator of content, you can contribute all that as well. Contact Sound Minds and work out a spot in the schedule, even if you want to be that dedicated, please do that. You could be right in the schedule of Grimner's evolving white elephant. Sound also tells me we have about 25 new syndications at the Rumble, as we rumble here against the Pavlov's lying ramble about free speech and decentralized Rumble, because it's not true, as we found out abruptly, without reason, without notice, without anything, gone. All the syndication's gone. And I'm told now, Rumble, we've had 58 RLM content syndication channels removed over the couple weeks, 3 weeks or so. And talk about the knock-on effect. Hundreds of thousands of listeners have been denied access. The right to acquire information has been denied access to this broadcast and the other fine hosts here that provide content or Sound Minds aggregates to bring in to the network for you to choose. So please, donate to us. You can see it in this press conference. Real journalism is going to be arrested and pulled away, handcuffed. And so it's going to be up to people. I don't consider myself in the press necessarily, but it is information going out, and it's of the news of the day. I convert over into notice of things we need to know so that we can be aware, so that we can respond timely and not like behind the scenes the day after something happens. And so a lot of it's local to us, so that's why I do it, just to keep people apprised. But we are bringing this new awareness, the new hard-hitting, direct focus on things that need to be done. So if you can, please donate. And thank you again, Montreal, for your generous donation again. Another one to RLM. I do really appreciate it. And I understand that's all going to some better hardware to keep things streaming pretty smooth. It's increasingly better and better. So thank you very much. And we had to, as I want to tell you, just caution us, But we had to switch over a lot earlier than anticipated, but these hardships that we got because we had to go so fast with the website being taken down and the host not working, it was a heist going on, we had to move pretty quick. And so the hardships that we've had because of that are being worked on and overcome one by one. It's just what a methodical thing. And Sound of the Crew's really taking a lot of time to do that and bringing us along. And there's still a lot going on in pulling things together, and every effort is being made to limit our network downtime as well. Pretty big challenge, actually. So please be patient here as the tests are being run and the new software and hardware is being installed and configured and all that kind of thing. There's still some things that aren't there. I'm hoping soon to get some more of the scroll of what we have recent so that everyone can find the most recent articles and podcasts or blogcasters that we have. That's still a little harder for people to find yet. And we're still getting used to behind the system about how that works as well. Right now, we also are designing a deeper redundancy within this. This is going to cost a little bit more. But all that should eliminate, eventually, most of all the conceived weak points that we've been watching and happening, and really bring this into what that unstoppable media, it will be realized by us, as I've been trying to talk to you about. Get us to where it's not going to be, there's not going to be much of an interruption no matter what happens, natural or unnatural. And also, again, you can help on some of this part to create an account at PeerTube and become a syndicator of content on that channel. Because that's a peer-to-peer type thing. That's like the matrix in the sewer type thing out amongst everything. And just lots of people have lots of information that's going on all kinds of places. And it's real hard to track everybody down. I know PeerTube's one central place, but once we got to have a start somewhere, and I think it'll branch out to other people. And you're seeing a little bit of the federated type technology. All right, so that'll be eventually where this starts to continue to go, but we're building the foundation of that right now so that it continues and continues and continues no matter what gets thrown at us for the future. And it's just been a little bit of a bigger project than we ever thought, but it's, again, we're here to be here. To continue the information, we do need the help. We don't make the millions at all. We don't really make the coffees too much, but the crew is working a little bit thin. But anyway, appreciate that, the donation that you have sent. And just understand we're doing a lot. There's a lot going on every day, 24, almost 24/7, it seems, trying to pull this stuff. It doesn't look like much is going on, but a lot of this is really a lot of work in the background. Because maybe there is no more mainstream media. Because you, my listener, are the media, if you will. And I've been hoping that we step up for ourselves and really pull that through and pull that off. So thank you again. I do appreciate it. Whatever all y'all can do, just maybe offer it, and we'll see where it can be placed, and we'll see how it fits into the workflow to try and get things done. And again, the website's still being built. The back end is still being put together. Making it more automated is hopefully... like I said, we got the scheduler working now. I think Sound is picking that up on making that work a lot better. And so things will go a lot more smoothly, and there'll be places for us when we get hosts to fit in real fast. So that'll be kind of nice. Get us back into what a network can do and be a place that people can show up. And eventually, it won't even really be tied to the website in a way more than you'll have it in your phone. Those apps I was telling you about that get all the data pulled off, see, we'll have it all isolated. Eventually, I'm hoping, it can't be done right quite yet, but I'm hoping you'll have an app and you'll understand. It'll be as simple as we can make it. You'll understand what's going on with it, and you'll be able to select where you're going, and there will be nobody to know where. You'll see it in the app. It's not going to be outward. Again, we'll have a presence, but it won't be so obvious. It certainly won't be like going to YouTube and having them cut us out or Faceplant or Rumble or any of that stuff. It's going to be what they talk about, we'll be doing that, not talking about it. So getting back to what about these hard-hitting questions about that Anthony Genocide Blinken didn't want to answer, including those about the Cannibal Directive, as I've named it, coming hours after that, we can see what's happening. Israeli strikes hit hostage detention site, says Hamas. An IDF attacked Gaza just hours after a ceasefire deal was announced, not agreed to, but announced, according to the spokesman for the militant group. Military arm of Hamas has said that the airstrike by the Israeli Defense Forces on Gaza that followed the announcement of a ceasefire deal had targeted a site where the female Israeli hostage was being held. The agreement was announced on Wednesday by the U.S. President-elect Donald Trump and subsequently confirmed by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It is expected to come into effect on January 19th and will include three phases, each of which will last 42 days. And this ceasefire is promoted by Trump as creating peace. But I'm going to suggest it's very far from it. Again, in three phases is a ceasefire, not the cessation of hostilities at all. Trump has said the Zionists will be supported in the Golan expansion as well. And if Trump meant peace in the Middle East, he would have not allowed the genocide to continue afterwards. If he forced Netanyahu's capitulation, there are no concessions to peace that should have been made by Trump. And because Israel is in a political shambles because of forcing the capitulation by Netanyahu, there's a core group that wants this to continue. They want to mow clean the Palestine of Palestinians. And Trump, because he did this condition, my feeling, I guess you can all have an opinion different than mine, he was able to get that concession just on a word. It's going to all hell to pay. Everyone thought it was about going after Hamas. I don't think so. I haven't thought about it that at all. I think this was targeted to Israel itself. And you saw the only person to make the decision was Netanyahu. Hamas was already on board. They were on board back in May. So let's look, make sure we keep our eye on the ball here. But when he was able to get Netanyahu to capitulate, even though there's still some more hesitation, even as I'm broadcasting this, they still want to drag their feet. The law was laid down, if you will. If Trump has that much power, he had the obligation to stop the war crimes and not delay them 42 days out and then 42 and then 42 to see if Israel would come back with something, which I think they will. And I make a comment to that to the ex-Twitter. But the people looking at this, the people in Palestine are rejoicing over this. I mean, really, it's kind of cool to watch. But my thought when I saw it, for all their heart and their soul and their determination, they're not in control of the killing field that's there. And I replied to Gerald Celente on ex-Twitter, who congratulated Trump on the ceasefire deal, which in a way is good. You stop killing, all right? But let's not focus on that. And I asked Gerald Celente in reply to his post of congratulating Trump on the ceasefire, did I miss something? 42 days and then? I want you to, I didn't put this on the post, but think about every 42 days, if they're going to not fight, not kill, not do for 42 days, it starts over the new phase. Oh, we'll look at that. And then, and the next 42, and then, and when you come to the end, even if Israel doesn't go back to a killing field, what happens on the third phase finish of the 42nd day? Keep asking, and then. Because this is an open-ended end. There is no peace at the end that's ordered and going to be fulfilled. Not by even Trump's own statements. In fact, he's talking differently. So I also responded to a poll by Gerald Celente asking how long would it be before Israel breaks the deal. And my reply is 30 seconds after the hostages are released. Now, these are a bit cynical responses, but they're not based in truth. They're based in what I've seen. And I think the whole point for Netanyahu is he needs those hostages back. As soon as the hostages are back, in a way, Hamas has no more bargaining chips to worry about. And Netanyahu could come out smelling like a rose that he got the hostages back. So I say 30 seconds past the hostages. I'm being generous here with Israel. But remember, and this is the thing, my problem with the Palestinian rejoicing. Yes, be happy, but it's not near over, I don't think you're going to have that real clean ability to be free and rebuild even Gaza, let alone your Palestinian state, into which these so-called Jews are supposed to assimilate, be assimilated in. Remember, Iran is still on Netanyahu's bingo card and in Trump's nick ear, too. This is all going to be stoked by the neo-clowns and all the politically, bribe money, the political bribe money that has gone in to support all this. Syria falling here did not hurt matters in that regard one little bit. All this kind of moved really smooth. They did a good job on that one, I have to say. It didn't end a bunch of things, but it certainly caused an interference. But it also gave Saint Yehu a big stretch of a leg he could start to make, and you saw that happen almost immediately. It certainly didn't stop Saint Yehu from ordering more war crimes, trespassing into Syria, and also stealing its water, like Trump stole Syria's oil. So Trump doesn't mean peace, I don't think. Not in the sense that maybe my listener might, or I would. Whether that's going to be the Middle East or even globally, he's promoting. Again, he's like a P.T. Barnum bus. Big talker, big deals, this, that, and the other, but watch carefully on what's really going on and to what extent. And on one other consideration I had was, will this ceasefire cause Satan's Yehu's downfall, that Trump doesn't feel obliged to fill Satan Yehu's last open bingo spot named Iran for the eventual greater Israel prize? And is that what Trump's 5D chess move is? If politically Satan Yehu goes down, maybe there's no pressure to fulfill Iran. And I can only hope that this is me, hopium beyond hopium, that there's another game going. Trump's actually playing it. Like I told you, if he gets elected, he's got to make everybody happy that put him there. But hopefully his plan's a little different. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any words come out of him that will do it. But is that Trump's 5D chess plan? If he gets rid of Satan Yehu politically, does he then have to follow through on the rest that he talked about? So we'll see, won't we? We're going to see. But I'm not holding my breath. But nevertheless, Trump could work to change my mind. Whether or not he ever knows that we exist. We tried 4 times, remember, to contact him. He would not respond, at least through the White House. Whoever he says he is. But we can read here, Israel intensified its airstrikes across Gaza just hours after the ceasefire and hostage release deal was announced, killing at least 70 people overnight. And I didn't hear a peep out of Trump in objection at all. So, peace indeed. Wow, just a crazy thing. Yeah, we're watching people just watch it. I found one of the ex posts I did just to show you that I did it. I sent it out. I guess you can trust me, but the point is that I guess it's an example of just respond to people. I wish that people would respond to me so I could get an actual sense, but they won't. And that's what shows me when I'm asking an honest question, like let's say even Sam Husseini. Asking honest questions. Max Blumenthal asking honest questions and not getting answers or getting vilified or getting silenced, the cricket treatment. I have to start questioning everything of everybody I'm looking at. And it's almost a sad thing to look out and see there's just not that much response. There's just not integration of information and the type of integration we need to make decisions for all of us. Anyway, looking at all these deficits, it causes me to make the decisions that I bring behind a woodshed to talk to you all about. And partly, I do hope it invokes continuing thought. You may interject your own thought for sure. It may cause you to go do some more research. You may know more research. You can interject that real fast. Like I say, you do some research and you know some subject matter really good. You can go pretty quick about how you want to decide something. There's a whole lot of different angles coming in, but the peacemaker, sound like I said last week, it's a peace taker. That's what Trump might be. In the last episode, I suggested that Greenland might ask Russia to protect it from Trump. Remember, if you heard last episode. This week, we hear, what? Denmark has suggested asking Russia for help to protect Greenland from a U.S. invasion. This was stated by Danish PM Carsten Hønge, who writes, quote, in a situation of extreme escalation and tension, we are forced to take extreme measures and ask Russia for help to solve this problem, and I'm sure that our request will be heard because Russia will not allow Greenland to become part of the United States. So I get to thinking, folks, there are a whole lot more people listening behind the woodshed than they will admit. What do you think? And remember, though, the United States already has a couple military bases up there and a radar installation and all that. So it's not so removed. They're just not underneath the territorial control of the United States government, but they're also in NATO. So, anyway, tongue-in-cheek a couple episodes ago, not so tongue-in-cheek. Now we're watching. I can predict they should ask. Here we go. They come in, they're going to predict, they're going to ask. That's this week. Now we keep moving. How fun this can be on one hand, very serious on another. The part of Trump's offer included Kanukistan, where we hear more hang-wringing from the Ontario Ford, the governor here, on Trump's tariff costs may be costing as well as maybe money. 500,000 jobs. Ottawa, January 15th, 500,000 people could lose their jobs in Canada's most populous province of Ontario in U.S. if U.S. President Donald Trump decides to impose tariffs of 25% on all Canadian goods. This was announced to reporters on Tuesday by the head of the largest Canadian province of Ontario, Doug Ford. This, Trump's tariffs, could cost us 500,000 jobs. This is serious. This is unprecedented, the head of the region said, adding that such figures were given to him by members of the Cabinet of Ministries after conducting an appropriate analysis. I suspect that won't be government jobs lost, though, folks. What do you think there up in Kanuka State? Do you think that's going to be a lot of loss of an overbearing amount of government workers? I understand now there's almost, I think there might be more per capita workers, government workers, than probably anywhere else that you're paying those big old expensive taxes for. So in a way, you have the same problem the United States does. So there really isn't any difference. I think why Trump said what he said, even if it was tongue-in-cheek, and maybe not, given the world that they want and the regions map that I saw years and years ago relative to the New World Order we were hearing about. It really was set up and really set up for a certain thing. It also consisted with, I think, I didn't do a check, but I thought it was, if I remember correctly, the WHO pandemic map. And those regions, I was talking about those regions, the CDC is not in any more than two regions. But yeah, those are the regions that two of which had to be having an epidemic, not just an outbreak, before they could do. But they changed that rule too, but just as a point of reference. So, but I suspect that all those 500,000, probably not going to be government jobs at all. And the unprecedented crisis is how will the government pay for bloated bureaucracy if there's a few left working that can cover that extortion to pay for it all. That may be what the real crisis Doug Ford's talking about. But you up in Kanuka State can make that decision. Like I said last episode, there's a momentum. Start using it. Get on that wave. Start surfing that tsunami. It's probably going to be some favorable winds for you all if you just get together. Whatever Trump thinks he wants to do, you can pull yourself out of the ashes of the WEF, if you will, or a world order there. Now, also referenced in last episode on the way to America Stanland, U.S. Congress has prepared a bill on the purchase of Greenland. Now, don't get all wild. This is not an act that was agreed to, but it's a U.S. Congress, half of the Congress, has proposed a bill, prepared one. And a group of Republicans led by the member of the House of Representatives, Andy Ogles, has developed a bill called the Make Greenland Great Again Act. If the Senate and the House of Representatives pass it, then immediately after the inauguration, Trump will begin negotiations with Denmark on the purchase of the islands. Quote, American economic and security interests will no longer be relegated to the background, and Republicans in the House of Representatives are ready to help Trump succeed in the interests of the American people, Ogles said in a Fox News commentary. But I won't get too deep into it, but it's looking like Greenland might be okay a little bit. The United States, the Americans, they're not so keen on Greenland. They don't think it'll help us at all. So it's very interesting what the politicians may like and the agendas they're pushing forward. But understand who's paying their bill actually behind the scenes that we may or may not know about it. And then there's a bigger run on the world that's going on and the interests that are going on. We here may be like in Ukraine and the money laundering system, that whole entire thing is. And so understand all these games at play. But yeah, this is supposed to be there for American economic interests and security. Again, they use national security as a fraud to hurt you. So they're doing it again, maybe even against Greenland. It's up to the people, we're told, though. So we'll have to watch this out. To tell you the truth, I don't care one way. If people want to make a decision that way, that's fine. What am I going to do? What are we going to do? Is this what Trump means for what makes America great again, though? The candidate for the post of head of Pentagon, Pete Hegseth, promised the Senate to stop drinking if he gets the post, but did not answer whether he would resign if a promise was broken. Trump's idea to give Hegseth this post, as claimed by the press, caused a shock in Washington. They wrote that Hegseth was fired from two groups to protect the interests of veterans, including because he was constantly drunk at work. And it's been kind of highly contentious, and I just somehow took an issue with it. And I needed to voice this because it started to speak to my mediocrity thing, whatever it is, started to make a loud noise. We're in the back to mediocrity, notwithstanding great again. Trump intends here an admitted addict to alcohol to make great America great again here? Really? Is that how we're supposed to read this? Addicts that don't have the will enough here or respect for the office enough to stop the addiction or decline to accept the office before engaging with Congress? That's the quality of people that we have here? I heard the guy's comments. I like what he sounds like, but these underlying problems are serious. So someone whose addiction is more important than for properly serving in excess of 300 million Americans in a position that has the potential to adversely affect billions of people globally, and at a time when America's integrity is on the line, it's a big deal. Now, I've heard his denials, but they don't fly. And they can't because in various ways he's admitted to it, having to deal with alcohol, with being an alcoholic. And I've dealt with, in my life, with people that were alcoholics. They were great people, really cool people, when they're not drinking. So this is not a minor condition to my mind. This is to be dismissed. I've been watching people dismiss this point. So I just keep thinking about, is this the best we've got? Is Trump can't find someone out of 300 million Americans who has sniffed gunpowder, which is one of the classifications for this, I guess, that he mentioned, that has as much dedication as headset, but without the baggage? Out of 300 million people, we can't find a guy or gal with those qualifications, without the baggage here. And then we find out this guy's a self-professed Christian Zionist. He's someone who said here, I am a Christian and I robustly support the state of Israel. So in a way, Christian and Zionism, based on the fact that a Zionist claims to be a religious people, but they're not, but they claim that, that's kind of an oxymoron. A Christian genocider? Is that what I'm supposed to hear from this? But again, when you have to deal with someone who's an addict, and I have dealt with people who used to be addicts, they're my friends, and they stopped the addiction. Boy, those turn out to be powerful people. But to stay inside it and not commit is a problem when you're dealing at this level. Remember here, Christian Zionists, but the underlying problem is Satan Yehu wants to attack Iran. So is this the best that Trump can do? I think this is a pathetic thing that we are watching. I think this is not terrific about what we have as an expectation of people. I think this shows, despite all the words of those that are going to agree to allow him to get into the office, that we have become a laughingstock to the world. And I think that's being reflected to us. So it's only, as I've been listening to what Trump's doing in his roll-up, he's not even in the office yet, but he's on his roll-up to get there. He's just slinging poo at the wall to see what sticks. But that isn't a plan. But yeah, folks, trust the plan. Trust the non-existent plan. Who flung poo? What stuck? It's still poo stuck, isn't it? And I get to thinking, does Q stand for Quincy Magoo? And everyone's just hopiums that all the Mr. Magoo short-sightedness works out? Is that what we are as a society? Oh, that Waldo and Presley, what'll they be up to next? It wasn't MAGA. It was Magoo. That's the plan to stand silent against and trust. Come on. No, it's not. So I'm not sure about all that's going down. I'm watching a failure happen right before, a car wreck happen before our eyes. The guy might be a great guy, but it comes down to these addictions. I have friends of great guys, like I said, when they're not drinking. And you don't know when that's going to happen, and you don't know for how long. And then it can get pretty ugly. That he won't commit, for as much as he says he supports the veterans and the fighters and the soldiers, He won't commit, but say, I will not, and I will resign if you find, you know, if I've been drinking alcohol. I don't even know what's going through his mind. But he's inconsistent as well in what he's doing. It's not really congruent to be a Christian Zionist as well. And that's really more troubling even to me than probably anything else. You can't be supportive of genocide and call yourself a Christian. That's maybe my opinion. I guess people can have their own. But to have a system working to get this guy in and have these incongruities in one of the most powerful positions in the world, actually, because of the war machine it wields and the nuclear war on top of that that it sits with, is it became a very important problem to me for some reason. I don't know why. But when he didn't want to commit to not being an alcoholic, when he didn't want to make America first, and then he calls himself a Zionist, I've got real problems with this guy. Even though he might be one of the greatest guys you might meet in generality, just in general. Anyway, I'm troubled by this thing. He might make a good first-hand man relative to the interests in advising. I don't know that he makes the guy that you need to have 24/7, you know, 365 and a quarter for 4 years. I'm not so sure. Now, based in this Zionist problem and them using it, because they're a political movement, they're using it to get advantage in the world. I'm always interested to see what the courts are saying relative to language. And one of the words they've been using, you use Zionist so you don't want to agree that you're not anti-Semitic. And that's the tower word, the weapon of choice against all of us who want to talk about certain problems. And when I see people using the word anti-Semitism, immediately presume they don't know what the word Semite means. And 9 times out of 10, if not more, it seems that's the truth. The court rejects Title IV lawsuit over alleged anti-Semitism at Haverford College. From today's decision, Judge Gerald McHugh, ED Pennsylvania, and Landau versus Corporation at Haverford College, a litany of complaints related in a general way to the same subject. In this instance, the serious problem of anti-Semitism is not the same thing as a legally cognizable complaint pled in accordance with the federal rules of civil procedure. So not only am I on a case that actually won't decide that case or that issue, they do explain about language, and they do explain that there needs to be certain things decided in a complaint. In other words, you translate a legal complaint to social dialogue, and we should start hearing certain things stated as facts, provable facts, that would give us a cause to have the objection relative to the use of someone complaining about anti-Semitism. This is probably one of the foremost things I want to point out here. We can just use the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure to understand what a complaint is, and we look in social media as they come at us in the future, as it comes us through here, and they start to attack us more. When you don't hear these elements that would make a legal complaint, you don't have to go be an expert here as far as like, well, you don't argue with that. You're listening to see whether they comport with the rules for what a complaint is. And if it doesn't, you don't have to engage it, first of all. Secondly, then you could do a minimal analysis on what they call the merits to see whether or not it could be an argument or whether or not it's a weapon itself and would be forbidden in the use. Plaintiff Jews of Haverford alumni ally Landau and 2 anonymous students allege that over the past year, Haverford College has become a bastion of anti-Semitism that is tolerated and at times perpetuated by the college. Plaintiffs contend that they have been personally affected by the eruption of disorder on campus. Specifically, they state that they have lost friends, faced harassment, been forced to change their routines, and dismissed out of seminal Haverford experiences because of escalated anti-Semitism. I'm going to interject on this paragraph to show you that's one of the rules. You have to show a cause that affects you and show that it has caused an effect in you. But listen what happens here. The short answer is just mentioning that it happens doesn't mean you have a complaint that it has happened. And this is what I want people to start understanding when they're listening at some people's arguments, if they can be at all, and whether or not you need to engage them or whether or not it's an attack against you to silence you, to remove your free speech because it sounds like it has. They assert the anti-Semitism of Haverford has fostered a hostile educational environment in violation of Title VI. and that Haver Ford has breached certain contractual obligations by failing to deal with the campus unrest. At this stage, and I've highlighted this point in this clause in these decisions before many times, at this stage, a court would typically review the relevant facts. I cannot cogently do so here due to the sprawling and disorganized character of plaintiff's amended complaint, which appears to detail every frustration and disagreement of Jewish students and faculty that has occurred at Haverford over the last year. It spills pages of ink on lengthy frolics about events on other college campuses and about ideological debates. Rather than isolating instances of harassment and logically relating them to elements of hostile environment claim, plaintiffs set forth a running list of grievances that reads more of an opinion editorial than it does a legal complaint. Although the plaintiffs present pockets of compelling facts, the burden is on the plaintiff to articulate how a particular fact supports the elements of a legal claim, not to send the court on a scavenger hunt. How many times have I told any of you that I've worked with, or even on this broadcast, find the elements and speak to those, that the case fulfills the elements written in the black and white. This is all he's talking about. Law 101, if you will, and understand what the attorneys failed to do here, if there's a valid complaint as well. I'm not dismissing they may have had one, but they didn't show it in their complaint. They didn't even have a complaint. As cogently observed by Judge Bodine of the First Circuit, it is not the court's role, especially in a counseled civil case, to create arguments for someone who has not made them, or to assemble them in, as from assorted hints and references scattered throughout the brief. The court therefore rejected plaintiff's Title VI claims. Number one, Title VI applies to anti-Semitic harassment on its face. Title VI does not address discrimination on the basis of religion. But there is an ample precedent classifying anti-Semitic harassment and discrimination as tantamount to racial discrimination. The Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, has also advised that Judaism is akin to race in specific instances where attacks are levied on shared ancestry or ethnic characteristics. How to apply it is far more complex question. As noted above, plaintiffs posit that Zionism is, quote, a central tenet of Judaism under the purview of Title VI, whereas Haverford proposes that, hear that, Haverford proposes, like a negotiation, right? Think about that in your court cases. Haverford proposes that Zionism is merely a political belief unprotected by Title VI. What have I been telling you about the Zionist Federation movement as a political movement? Here it is. Haverford is actually saying that in so many words. For purposes of legal analysis, resort to such generalities is not useful because the many meanings of Zionism makes its relationship to Judaism extremely complex, made all the more complicated by strong emotions incited by strife in the religion and by the broad diversity of opinion within the Jewish population itself. Parenthetically, I accept that a commitment to the existence of a Jewish state, though notably not a carte blanche endorsement of any activity of the state, is a piece of ethnic identity for many, though not all, Jewish people. Deciphering when criticism of Israel and the promotion of the Palestinian cause veers into anti-Semitism is necessarily a fact-specific endeavor, and on that score, plaintiff's complaint is insufficiently pled. Number two, plaintiffs do not plead facts supporting aggregation of their claims, as a result, fail to plausibly establish the existence of a hostile environment. Absent clear factual pleadings as to who knew what and when they knew it, who, what, where, when, why, right? This is what they're talking about, like being a journalist, as we talked about earlier, the journalist asking questions, being tossed out. Absent factual pleadings to the who knew what and when they knew it, plaintiffs cannot show that each plaintiff was aware of each instance of harassment alleged, and as such may not aggregate their claims to demonstrate the presence of a hostile environment. Without aggregation, the vast majority of plaintiffs' claims in isolation are not sufficiently severe or pervasive to constitute a hostile environment under Title VI. Beyond broadly referencing the other 278 pages of their amended complaint and exhibits, plaintiffs do not articulate in which specific instances they believe Haverford violated this policy. A college non-discrimination policy can constitute a contractual obligation where a plaintiff pleads specific facts surrounding the policy and its violation, but plaintiffs summarily refer to their multiple allegations of discrimination and deem that sufficient to establish a breach of the anti-discrimination policy. This hardly suffices to plead breach of contract. It also is worth noting that the element of claim for breach of contract is the requirement that, quote, a plaintiff must set forth facts regarding resultant damages. You've heard me say all this to you. You just can't have a harm without a damage. You don't have a damage, it's not a complaint. The government can do anything as long as there's no damage involved, if you get that part, too. Anyway, going back to here, not a single paragraph, the entire amended complaint references any injury stemming directly from Haverford's alleged breaches of contract. So for those of you writing complaints, take note of this article, get the link in the blogcaster. There's much more to glean from all of this as well. I just read a bit of it. Anyone who I've worked with in the past would likely recognize my constant questioning regarding all the focusing on avoiding the problems mentioned in this case as well. And so tie your non-opinionated who, what, where, why, and when facts to the law, the element, and then to the breach that caused specific harm. Not an opinion of a harm, actual harm. Otherwise, if you don't, you'll fail to write a legally cognizable complaint pled in accordance with the federal rules of civil procedure as these attorneys did. They probably got lots of money unless they worked on contingency. Maybe they're not going to work so much anymore. But this is a basic law 101. And I'm asking people to turn this into maybe not an argument with people, but as you think about your problems, the problems come against you. Find out whether or not they're a real problem or they're just somebody spewing. They're just somebody getting something off their chest. It reduces the workload, and you're also assessing it as you go. You can make a list of statements relative to the problems, and you're not into the opinions, you're not into the emotion of it, and you're coming better and more quickly to be able to respond in the more proper way that maybe even pulls you out of the problem or actually puts the pressure on someone who may have a right but then hasn't done it quite right either, and you get to test that as well. This has been BTWRLM 612, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips or Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum light. In house court, no place to hide. A can of whoop ass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed.
week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.